If you want to learn the seven pillars of customer service and turn your business into the Chick-fil-A of apartments, you better listen up. Hello, everybody. Six Sense, I host the Jake and Gino podcast here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, chef, the father of six, the best-selling author, G-Daddy, and now the opera singer, Gina Barbara. How's it going?
Jake, it's going good. How's your midday going?
Dude, I'm loving it. This is the first one. We've been off for about a week for MM5, you know, had a little travel, and I'm back in the saddle, my man. Always making it happen.
Hey, so, good.
Ready to go. Hey, got a very special guest today. Today, we are truly honored to have with us one of the world's leading customer service experts. And Gino, you know we're going to be talking about Chick-fil-A, all right? My pleasure, baby, all day. Keynote speaker, he's an author, and we're excited to learn more and dive deep into his insights on the seven pillars of customer success. So without further ado, Wayne McCulloch, welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. Great to be here. Lovely to join you. It's actually early evening here, so I don't have the benefit of having a midday energy boost right now, but I'm excited to talk to you.
I'm going
to
be your midday energy boost, friend. We're going to get this thing rocking and rolling.
Work for me.
Awesome. So as Gino said a minute ago, let's get to know each other a little bit. We're going to start dating here. Let's hear a bit about your background and how you got started in business.
Yeah, absolutely. So back in the 90s, graduate from college, I get a job in a call center, like a lot of people just trying to work out what I'm going to do with my life. And I had some friends working at a software company. They're like, this is amazing. Everyone wears casual clothes to work. There's like Pop-Tarts in the cupboards. You can just like drink soda all day, work from home. And it just seemed like a fascinating place. And I went and got a job there. And my whole life has been spent in software. And it's always been on the customer side, not through design, not through like, this is what I want to do. It's just where they put me. And I loved it. And I got the opportunity to relocate from Australia, Melbourne, Australia, to Chicago back in 1999 with a company called PeopleSoft. And then from there, just started to really hone the craft on customer facing, customer service, customer adoption to technology, all those type of things. And so now I find myself significantly many years later as a chief customer officer for a publicly traded company called WalkMe. It's a digital adoption platform. And I head up basically once a deal is closed, that customer comes to my organization and we're responsible for onboarding, adoption, value attainment, retention of that customer, expansion and advocacy. And that's really what I spend my life doing now. And it's like literally living my best life. This is my favorite job I've ever had.
What, before diving into the book, Wayne, what were some of the things you learned at the job at PeopleSoft with as far as customer service goes?
Well, for me, it's the first opportunity for me to actually have a job where I'm actually sitting in front of our company's customers all day, every day. I was in the training and education space. And so for me, I got to see people's difficulties and challenges with using the technology. And so all the marketing's great. We always have great marketing, right? We have to get people in the door because that's the lifeblood of any business. But what I discovered was then once you get in the door, then you have these hurdles, you have these things that stop value from being obtained by the customer. And so for me, I'm like, well, we should work really hard to avoid these things, to eliminate these things, or if they're not avoidable, help customers get through it. And so without really knowing it, I started on this journey of trying to work out what makes a customer successful. And so that evolved as the industry evolved, went from old architectures in software to SaaS. And then I worked at a company called Salesforce, which kind of really built that born in the cloud type mentality. And I've worked at places like Google. And so over the years, I really started to get that feeling of we should be helping our customers more get success.
So Wayne, I'm going to share with you a couple experiences that I've had over the last couple of weeks with customer service and companies. I shouldn't name them, but I will.
Venmo. Oh, Gino's going gangster right now.
Venmo, you suck. You suck, Venmo. I just want to let you know you suck.
Put a cigarette butt out in their eyes, Gino. Get them.
PayPal is not much better. Stripe is not much better. I mean, I get it. You guys want to go remote. Amazon, you suck too. You guys want to go remote. I get it. But can I speak to somebody? You know, let me throw an Comcast Xfinity in there. Horrible. What's wrong with these companies like Venmo? I'm trying to actually
attach my bank.
No, hold on. You time out.
I'm going to piggyback on this.
I'm trying to attach my bank onto Venmo. And I've talked to six people. I've emailed, can you please get the damn thing fixed? I'm just trying to use your platform. And at this point, now I'm speaking negatively about them. It's I'm not even an advocate. I'm a de-advocate of them. And I'm trying to find another platform such as Zelle to use. Wells Fargo is not much better either. There's not many options out there for these kinds of platforms. And these companies get so big. And all they're worried about is their value creation and what the bottom line is when they don't understand that I'm a pissed off customer and I'm not going to use you anymore. Go ahead, Jake.
Gino, I was just piggyback here. So I understand the mentality is we need to train the cattle. And that's literally how I feel as a customer, is that they're attempting to train me to never have to speak to a human and figure it out on my own. And it fucking pisses me off to the extent that it literally, I didn't know we were going there today, but this shit, I'm in the same boat. It drives me bleeping nuts. Like, I don't want to be programmed to figure shit out on my own. That's why I'm giving you money. Put the money into having a human be able to pick up the phone and walk me through something when I need it, instead of every obstacle is a door closed in my face, having to call three times, versus when I want to give you money, hello, we love you, come here. And the minute that there's a customer defect, F you, wall block, figure it out on your own, there's the effing door. That's been my experience with a lot of tech companies. And we're not pointing the finger and saying to you, but I know that you understand this deeply. No question. Let's just talk about this.
What is the question? Oh. I mean, the question for me would be, why do they do it? Why do they do this? They understand that there's value in retaining a customer. The lifetime cycle of a customer is where the value is. You're getting users onto your platform. You want to
retain deep hatred users. Right now for tech companies and customer service in most instances, right? It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, look, to be honest, I don't think it's just tech companies. It might be what we're more subjected
I agree.
To today. You know, everything's on
it's,
our phones.
It's service-based companies too, like Verizon and Comcast. They're not as bad as eventually you can get through. But I mean, I don't know. I'm guessing if I try to call Google right now, there's no human that's going to be there to pick up the phone. Could be wrong, but you know.
It might sound like a human.
Yeah.
Probably is not. Okay.
So but it is not a human.
there's some interesting things here. So first of all, when I was at a company called Looker, that was my most amazing customer service experience, right? They had a department called the Department of Customer Love. And I'm like, that's just marketing. Like, that's not a real thing, right? It was the support organization. The customer service organization was called the Department of Customer Love. And I didn't get it until I started working there. And what happens is they embed the ability to live chat 24 hours a day in the product. So when you have a problem, for example, Venmo, there's like a chat button, you click it. Average wait time is 20 seconds, but someone is there to say, what's up? How can I help? What do you need? And for me, this suddenly became a calling of like every company that doesn't have that embedded in the product, any product or a bank or anyone, if they just don't have that, it's not just live chat, it's live chat with answers that can be resolved in seconds and minutes, because my time is valuable and I can't spend 30 minutes waiting for someone to call and then get transferred multiple times, then accidentally cut off, and then you call back and start again. We've all been through that experience. But to answer your question, we put up with it. That's the problem. We put up with it and we're just like, oh, Comcast is so bad, but I don't cancel my Comcast subscription. If more people just said, you guys suck, I'm leaving. Okay. Yeah, I did too, actually. But the more people that do that, the more it's going to hurt the bottom line, which is why they're doing it. How much can I get away with and maximize my profits and minimize the number of people, which is the most expensive part of any technology company? How can I minimize the people to maximize my profit? And at some point, there's a tipping point when revenue starts leaving. That's when it hurts. That's when they say, look, we got to do something different. But it's not happening right now.
Tony Hsieh, the owner of Zappos, he was really amazing about creating that culture. Why don't more companies adopt that? Is it just too expensive? Is it just too difficult? I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
It's just trust. So during the pandemic, March 2020, I sat down with our finance CFO and I said, this is going to be bad. Like, we can already see companies are starting to shut down. Other companies are going out of business because there's no customers anymore. Everyone's stuck at home. We need to empower our customer success and our renewals team to on the spot say, you know what? Times are tough. I understand you're in a restaurant. You're not open right now. I'm going to give you a 12-month suspension of any subscription fee. You keep using our software. We're going to help you through this time. And I could do that up to a certain amount, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year subscription, right? But empower the people in the moment when someone calls and says, hey, we just got to cancel. We can't afford it. Times are tough. give that person the ability to, in Tony Zappos, give them free shoes, give them free shipping. Give the person who's helping the authority to be able to help, not just empathize and say, sorry about that, fill out this form, go to this website, send a letter. Like, no, take care of it in the moment, move on.
And be able to handle it in the moment. I think that's the key, because so many times people get kicked around and then it just ratchets up the anger, because look, this is wasted time on the customer having to reach out to you for the defect, and then you extend it on and on.
It's your defect, but it's my problem. Like, yeah, your product doesn't work, but it's my time that's impacted.
Yeah, and there's never a consideration for that. And it's also interesting too, like and I'm going to sound like an old fart here, but the younger the generation, it's like there's this like stance of authority, and like almost they're like talking down to you at times, and it's like, what are you guys doing right now? Like, you don't understand, like, I'm the reason you have a job.
You're exactly right.
What the hell? Yeah. It's nuts.
So I think, first of all, we tolerate it. And second of all, companies don't have that trust to allow these people to make the right decision. And look, sometimes they're going to get it wrong. But getting it wrong a couple of times is better than every single experience is horrible. You can't deny that.
What you're talking about, though, is important, Wayne. It's
timing's huge.
You're talking about a guideline. Most companies say, we have policies here. This is our policy. What Wayne is telling everybody who's listening, have the guidelines where you can go off veer and make that call for it. I forgot the restaurant in New York City. He's a small giants. It was in the book Small Giants, where he has a bunch of restaurants, and he empowers every single one of his servers to see what's going on a separate occasion. If they're having a birthday party, maybe you give them a piece of cake. If they want to sit at a different table, that's a guideline where you're empowering your employees. But it also comes back, Jake, to core values and to culture. The company needs to have core values and needs to express that through their core values and their culture, and then empower the employees to be able to pull that through. We need to dive into the seven pillars of customer service. If you want to jump into those, let's talk about those, so we can at least help people see what customer service looks like and have them start building their own. The first one is operationalizing. Tough word, Jake. Operationalizing customer service. Can you describe what that means to us?
All that means is, can I do the right thing for the customer every single time at scale? So as my company grows and grows and grows, invariably what happens is service gets worse and worse.
The breakdowns, yeah.
So operationalization, the reason why I started with, everyone's like, why are you starting with that one? And I'm like, because if you set a foundation to say, no matter how big my company is, one person, three people, 10 people, no matter what size it is, if I put into place the mechanisms to allow us to continually give the right experience, the right answer, be able to help the customer every time as I grow, and I keep doing that, that sets you apart from pretty much every other company on the planet. He doesn't start that way. So I started with operationalization, which is just think about, what is the process? What is the flow? What are the bottlenecks? What are the things that will trip us up as we grow that stops us from being amazing for our customers? And that's why it's the first pillar.
And for us, we started out with hiring a customer experience officer. Actually, we had an employee. We just made her the customer experience officer, where she's heading up customer service and she's handling all that. So as we start growing, she's the head and operationalizing and have her take care of that. And as we grow, we're going to have to hire more people in customer service, but we've started that process as well. So I'm glad that you cleared that up. I was like, wow, operationalizing, what does that mean? Next one is onboarding. And this is important because we're an education company. And even for the property manager side, when you're onboarding a customer, we have an onboarding call. We have an entire post-enrollment process where we're hitting people with an email. Then we have an onboarding call. Then we're sending out a thank you card. Then we're sending out a swag box. So the onboarding is so important, but it's all, as you say, there's a system to it. And we've been refining for the last couple of years. And as we get better, we just want various touch points with the customer. We don't want them to have cognitive dissonance where they put down a big investment to work with us, and then all of a sudden that onboarding is so crucial. So you want to dive into that second step for us?
Yeah. The thing I'll say about onboarding, just like, this is where the seeds of churn start. If you have a poor onboarding experience, that little like, oh, that kind of sucked, well, that wasn't great, every other experience I have from now on has lowered in its impact to me because I've got this little thing that's nagging me about that poor experience. And so we talk about planting the seeds of churn. Happens every day you're talking to a customer, you have an opportunity to unfortunately plant that seed, right? So onboarding is that first opportunity to not only avoid planting that seed of doubt in that customer's mind, or maybe I made the wrong choice or whatever it is, and elevate a customer up so high so that you can afford to make mistakes later and you'll be forgiven. Think of Apple and, you know, antenna gate and the plug and changing the like things that would just destroy a but they've built you up so high, you can take a few hits, but that's in the future. So right now, onboarding, you're new. We have to start this relationship right.
Yeah. And so we also own and manage apartment homes. So think about it like this. Gino's talking about over delivering and, you know, the after the process when they come on, but imagine if you go in your apartment home on the first day, they say it's been inspected, but then that shower head is not working and they need to get to work the next day. Those are the types of defects that can really tweak people out. So that's why ensuring that the base is nailed to begin with, and then building on top of that. That's the operationalize, I think, you know, starting out there. That's a key component.
Yep, that goes back to, in order to make sure that is always fixed before someone comes in, there has to be some operationalized process. Mm-hmm. And it could be something simple like a checklist. Someone goes in and says,
and it's not one, right? Because the first one may miss it. You probably need two, right? You probably need two absolutely. Runs at it. So yeah,
and absolutely. Wayne, what we've done with our onboarding though also is we've actually every time we hire mentorship, we onboard a mentorship student. We donate 600 meals to Second Harvest Food Bank. So throwing to you know in the name of the student, so they don't expect that in the least, and we're hitting two things. We're actually hitting one of our big audacious goals by wanting to get 1 million meals by the 2030. We're allowing our students to be part of that mission as well, and we're saying to them, here's part of the money you invest in us. We're going to invest it in this charity, in this organization. That's amazing. Over 96% of the money that goes to them actually goes to people in need. So that onboarding, you can become as creative as you want with that. And you're sharing your core values and your culture with the student or the clients that you have.
Yeah, I think that's really important because obviously younger generation today, we know they're very mission driven. Like you see all the statistics, they'd rather work with a subpar product if it was mission driven, if they identify with the mission, mm-hmm. right? That's one bit. So great, cool. There's a change, there's a shift in how generations sort of what they value. Cool, let's adapt to that. But secondly, in this case, for me, it's more about I've got two sets of value from the money or the investment I'm making in whatever it is I'm doing. So I'm going through this education program, but I'm getting two sets of values. So you talk about value is what keeps people coming back, right? If I'm getting value, I'll keep paying because I'm getting value. And so now I'm getting it from the service that I'm buying from you, but I'm getting this something else as well. So now I'm doubling up on value, which is often a missed opportunity for us. That doesn't take a lot. It certainly helps people, in this case, the charity, the mission, the organization you're helping, but it also gives that person, that customer, that student in your case, double the amount of value, even if they don't ask for it, like you said. But it's kind of cool. Like, my decision to do this kind of helped.
Well, because here's the thing. It's either going in our back pockets, which we're all for, right? We love it, or it's actually going to a cause, and they know where it's going, right? So it's very clear, and it's for a great cause. So.
Meaningful impact. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I love it. That's great. Hang on, let me just take a note. No, actually, we had a customer event recently, and basically, as you went around and consumed learning, and maybe you did an advocacy video, or maybe you sort of got trained on a certain product, you'd get these points, and you could go to the swag store and use the points to buy stuff: a T-shirt, a cap, a poster. You could go in a raffle to win a custom built, you know, desk chair from a graffiti artist, custom built Converse shoes. There were all these cool stuff, right? You know what the number one most popular item was in the swag store?
What?
You could donate money to a charity for either children, animals, or the environment. Mm-hmm. And I'm like,
I'm all about feeding the kids, man. And that's where this came from. Like, you got to feed the kids because I hate being hungry. And that's kind of where this thing stemmed from. But you know, it's interesting because I was on watching Yellowstone last night, and this commercial pops up, and this clothing company gives a pair of socks for every pair of socks that you buy. Bomb. And I'm thinking about, yeah. And Gina, I'm thinking about it. We're giving 600 meals and these guys are spending millions of dollars on ads because they're tossing in a pair of socks, bro. I think we're doing something right here. Cause that's like,
by the way, how
600 meals is a lot more impactful than a pair. Socks are great, but it's not 600 meals.
How was Yellowstone last night? Did you enjoy it last night?
It was fantastic. As always, just nailed it. Just crushed it. Absolutely loved it.
No spoilers.
I still got it's a 2-hour banger, and I still got the second one coming up tonight. We cut it halfway because we're gonna extend the fun. But
nice. Adoption number three. So we've got operationalizing, we've got onboarding, and now we're adopting. Let's get into the adopting phase.
Yeah, so you're a company and you offer a service, a product, you offer something of value. You want your customers to be able to achieve all of the value that you're providing. And I use an example of like Excel spreadsheet, right? Pretty much everyone knows how to use an Excel spreadsheet. But there is 9,000 things you can do with an Excel spreadsheet. Most people know how to do add, subtract, some columns, maybe a border, title. It looks kind of cool. They're happy with it, right?
That's the extent is, for me.
Yeah, me too. But the fact is, like, when we have offerings, whether it's software, product, service, you have a bunch of pieces of value that allow a customer to be successful or to grow or to learn or whatever it is. And so adoption is all about thinking about the process of how can I, not all at once, but how can I evolve over time the ability for someone to grow into all the advantages we're going to bring them with this thing they're purchasing or paying for. That's all adoption really is. It's not about using it once and moving on. It's just about how can I actually maximize the utility, the value that this particular offering, service, product offers to me? How can I do that in a seamless and easy way? That's really hard to do because you'd just send an email. Hey, don't forget, we can do this, 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 or we got six videos and two things. Watch all the videos. But how do you make it easy for someone to do that other than just telling them? Because that generally doesn't work.
That is a challenge for us because with the education, we have weekly lessons on Monday. We have our training platform. We have a Toastmasters group. We have a Women of Wheel of Our Profits. We have a couples coaching monthly. We have masterminds we do once a year outside the community. We have various boot camps. We have the coaching calls. There is so much involved and it's like drinking from a fire hose and you don't want to overwhelm them, but at the same time, you want to gently prod them through. And as students stay on longer, they're able to access a lot of those different resources. And that is a challenge without overwhelming them, but that's mm-hmm. where you see the true value. And I think that's one of the things that we've been pretty good at because our students are really doing well with taking deals down. And our life cycle, it takes a lot longer than the average product. Like you go on Venmo, like you said, oh, transfer money. But for us, it may take 12 months for a student to actually underwrite a deal, buy the deal. And then all of a sudden after 12 months, hey, I did a deal. I finally became successful. But how do you keep them on the platform and keep them engaged and make sure that they are adopting a product? So that's a very important step that you put in there. I agree with you.
Yeah. And I would say this is where data becomes so critical. Because one of the things when I got to this company here, WalkMe, or even look at Google, Salesforce, any of these companies, is you look at the data and you say, What is the natural progression? Someone who does this, what is the next step they normally take? And the data will say, actually, most commonly, someone who learns about identifying what the right property is to buy, the next thing they have to do is finance, right? So that's just the logical step. So I need to look at how long does it take someone to get from here to here? Okay, let's say it takes 3 months. All right, how can I accelerate that to 2 or 1? In other words, how do I accelerate the value that that person is getting faster? Okay, now we have to think about what is the process by which we can encourage, advise, guide, incent the person to get to that next step. And data will tell you the things you're doing, are they working, are they not working? So this is where data is really important to help drive the customer journey you want them to go on, and then the signals that tell you they're doing it. And if they're not, what are the playbooks? What are the things I have to do to make sure they get back on track? And that's what customers, like this whole framework's about, is understanding that journey and understanding where someone is so you know the right action to take to ensure that they can keep getting value from what you offer. Because sometimes it's just hard to navigate and everyone's in their own life and there's a lot going on. Mm-hmm. So you have to be very purposeful about how do I get someone to move to the next step? Because it's to their benefit.
Mm-hmm. And the next step is retention. Let's discuss retention.
That's just value attainment. I debated in my head. I'm like, should I just call it value realization or something? Like the retention is I'm going to stay because I've gotten value and I think I'm going to get more value in the future. That's why people will retain with any subscription, whether it's Disney Plus or the App Store, like some of the services from Apple, or any subscription offering you have, Stitch Fix. Like, I've gotten value before and I believe I'll get value in the future. So this step is all about how can I make sure the person knows they're getting value? Sometimes it's obvious, sometimes it's not, but how do I make sure they know? And then how do I give them confidence there's more value to be had? And so that stage is all about understanding what that looks like and creating an operationalized way to make sure you can do that with every single person that you
guys know. This is huge because the alignment of the organization and the customer over time is this is the most impactful thing to the organization, because Many companies, if you're with them for 3 months, maybe there's a break even there. If you're with them for 6 months, maybe they start making some money. If you're with them for 12, they really start to profit. So if you can continue to add value to that relationship, it's going to be better for the organization to retain the customer. You know, and it's just, we talk about, with going back to the apartment side, the most expensive unit is the vacant unit. So if you can retain the customers by doing the right thing, it's very similar in what Wayne's talking about. I'm sure what Gino's about to say here.
And Wayne and Gene, Wayne and Jake, this is what we really obsess about. This is what every entrepreneur should obsess about. We just had our live conference. There were over 1,200 attendees at that conference. And a lot of them, about 200 of them, were current Jake and Gino students. And Jake and I said, how do we add value to them who are currently part of the community? What we did is at 8 p.m. on Saturday evening, we had a private concert. I sang opera, and we had,
and that's all they needed.
Well, they got a little bit more. They got Vanilla Ice. So Vanilla Ice came, and he performed on stage at inside of like this nice indoor courtyard. And the students were completely, I think, blown away by it. They saw the value that we provided. Was he cheap? Absolutely not. Was it worth it as far as a brand builder, as far as that retention piece? I was probably doing it intuitively without thinking about it. But I want to be able to create value for my students and create value for the community and say, hey, if you join this community, this is what you're going to get. And to continue to reinvent ourselves and to continue to add value, you're going to have raving fans. A lot of our students now, and this is pretty unheard of in the education space, are our best referral source. They're referring our services to people in that hallway saying, you need to join these guys because these people put on an amazing event. They have a ton of value. So that's where you really want to start getting. Once you've adopted and you've started having them go through your fulfillment, how do you retain them? How do you add value? And that's the question.
But you know, it's also results-based education. Everything is based on their results. And that's that value over time that Wayne's talking about. That's the most important like KPI metric that we look at.
Mm-hmm. So outcome-based value is number one.
Yeah.
By the way, I watched a lot of your I was learning more about, you know, the stuff that you guys do, the Jake and Gino stuff, and I was looking at the testimonials. And one thing that was really clear, apart from the fact everyone's excited, but you're only going to post the excited video. So I already discount and say, look, they're all going to be positive fans. But the one thing I noticed was almost every one of them I watched, I must have watched a dozen, all say it's an amazing community.
I knew you were going to say that. I don't want to get ahead of you, but it is. It's the community, 100%. Yeah,
but, 100%. But you realize that That's not Jake and Gino. That's the community they're talking about. You've
now
created-
you sound like Gino's wife. It's not you two. It's the community. Okay, fine.
Wait, you want to meet my wife? I can introduce you to my wife because I think she'd love you. Because every time I bring up an email or something, she's like, "It's not you, damn it." I said, "Okay, you're right. I guess."
But the other thing I'll say too, look, is like 20 years ago, I was an early student of gamification. Right, it was just this thing that was emerging. How do we gamify stuff? You know, Candy Crush and all these games you get addicted to is all about gamification. In other words, how do I motivate someone to do something? That's what gamification is, right? Mm-hmm. And through that study, I learned, I saw this really interesting statistic that said 10% of the people are motivated by reward. 10% of the people are motivated by recognition. 80% of the people are motivated by privilege, meaning I get access or I have something happen to me that is not available to everyone else. So when you're telling the story, we grab our 200 students, we stick them in with Vanilla Ice. No one else is in there, just this community. That creates privilege. And privilege is what motivates people to take action. So whether you mean to do it or not, it's literally the exact right thing. When we think about our customers, how do I give them privilege? Because that's going to motivate them to do more and want more. And I think that's really important because who doesn't love privilege? Who doesn't love to say, go home to their family and say, I met Vanilla Ice tonight. That's pretty awesome, right? Like it just makes people feel good. And if you can make people feel good, I think you're halfway to winning.
I love that. The next one is expense. Can you go over what expense means?
Expansion.
Oh, expansion. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's all about if I've got someone in my community in as a customer of mine, what other offerings, what other pieces of value can I give them? And how do I enable them to acquire that in the easiest way possible? Mm-hmm. So again, we're a business. You know, we don't do this for fun. We're a business. We're here for a reason. But doesn't mean we have to be assholes about it. We don't have to be, you know, just all about the dollar. It's I have other things that people could take advantage of. And so how do I allow that opportunity to be presented in a way for the customer to really understand, or in this case, a student or whoever, to an investor, to go consume that piece of value, because we know it's going to be better for their life. We know we're changing these people's careers. We're changing their futures. So we want them to consume this, but not everyone knows that out of the gate. So that pillar is all about understanding what's that next step. What's that next piece of value I can go obtain to make me a better person, to give me a better future, to enable me to make more money, or whatever it is the motivation that person has. And that's what that pillar really focuses in on.
Damn, spell
check. Just want to make one comment real quick. And you said you don't need to be assholes, right? Let's go back to earlier when Gina was talking about Venmo. I think it's actually against your own self-interest to create these walls and be assholes. And so you're saying, well, we're a business. We're here for a reason. But gang, ultimately, if you are, look at your own self-interest, and creating these negative experiences is not in the interest of the organization. And I think it comes from the top and leadership that they're so disconnected that they don't understand the experiences that are taking place. And they're not reviewing their KPIs and the customer data that's coming in on the experiences that are taking place, or they just don't give a shit. So either way, they're not acting in their own self-interest. And that's some of the issues with short-termism that you see in business today, and CEOs that are going to be there for 3 to 5 years that are going to say, I'm going to ratchet this up, drop the hammer, and then take my parachute and leaving. This is where this stuff breaks down.
So I feel like you hit the nail on the head, right? In corporate America, you're a public company, quarterly results, everything's motivated. Most companies are going to be motivated by the next 3 months.
Yep.
So if I can move more call center agents out, I save a bunch of money by pushing my people to.
And then you get an award for hurting the long-term value of the organization, right?
Yeah. And then if you really mess up, you get a really big award to leave.
Yes.
So there's no incentive for you to get it done right. And there are a few companies that do it right. And we always know what they are. But the reality is we have an incentive built into the model. And there's a reason why you go look at the Fortune 500 companies from 40 years ago. You can count on one hand how many are still there. 30 years ago, yep. Count on one hand, 20 years ago. There's not many left because they're all optimizing for the short term and eventually they die.
Well, that's Wayne, part of the problem is that it's hard for an individual to quantify the value of a brand. Creating a brand is a much bigger ROI than getting some Facebook ads and doing the next 3 months. The problem is most people don't understand how to quantify the value of that. You see it with the Chick-fil-A's, with the Apples, with those companies that have those brands, but most people don't want to be around long enough. It's a lot of hard work, and it's hard to say, well, this company is worth this. It's a feel, but I guarantee you, we can talk about Chick-fil-A right now. I don't really particularly like the food. I never go eating there, but I'm mesmerized.
Gino,
by
bite your tongue.
It's the greatest restaurant on the planet. I don't understand. Close.
And I want to tell you something. I was driving back through Georgia the other day, and there's a Truett's. I'm about to blow your mind. You may know about this. There's base level Chick-fil-A, which I've been a raving fan of for years. We pull in, and I see in these beautiful neon lights, Truett's. And my wife's like, oh, shit. I'm doing Instagram stories on this thing. I'm posting it. It's a sit-down Chick-fil-A where they actually have servers bringing you out the food. Never experienced that in my life. I about blew my head off here. I'm like, oh, my God. I never knew about this. It was next-level Chick-fil-A for me, for a raving fan. We went in. We had more of my pleasures than I can count. And I was happier than pig and shit, man. It was one of the best days of my life. I don't know where we're going with this, but yes, it was amazing.
I just wanted to say, Jake, the experience that they deliver, everyone knows about it, that you can get a 16-year-old making $12 an hour, be pleasant. They can get you through
a
line in
5 minutes. Treat me the way I
want
to be treated.
Exactly.
I feel like I'm getting value exchange for my hard-earned dollars. That's
mm-hmm.
it.
I take my dog to the drive-through Chick-fil-A because they give my dog a bone, a little tiny treat, a little bone. And I'm like, I'll come here every time just for that because I love my dog that much that even if the food's not amazing or it's not my favorite or I don't even feel like it that
it's
night,
consistent
I'm still
and
my dog
and perfect
dog
for what it is. Yep. It's a $9 chicken sandwich and it's just great for $9 with the experience.
Jake, you know why I brought this up? It's because the next pillar is advocacy. You're being an advocate to the brand. I mean, I'm genius,
aren't
I?
I don't know why I'm not getting paid yet for this. This is the only thing I'm saying. Like, guys, help a brother out. Come on. Oh, wait, I'll wear the shirt. What's it take?
So advocacy really is just about mobilizing those people that had a great experience to help you acquire new ones. Because there's so much noise, there's so much marketing, there's so much people sort of rolling their eyes saying, you know, we have the best customer service ever. Like when phone ads tell me like, we have the best coverage in North America and like where I live, they don't. So I don't, that ad means nothing to me.
You're telling me that to make up for something that you're lacking right now, right?
Exactly. So for me, it's like, you know, have those people that have a great experience, if they can speak on your behalf, that's the most powerful thing. People just trust what other people say more than they would trust a brand, especially en masse. Obviously, you're going into Amazon, you know, 5-star reviews, 3-star reviews. But the reality is if people are going to stand up and put their face, like your testimonial videos on the website, I sort of skim over the marketing. This is great. We're amazing. We change your life. We do all this stuff. And I'm like, of course you are. You're in business. You're doing great. But I just want to know what the experience is like. And when I listen to the people, I'm listening for keywords and things like that's why I heard community. And I'm like, I want to be in a community because Jake and Gina are amazing. But ultimately, every day of my life, they're not there, right? But the community is. They're there to help, to learn from, to have a shoulder to cry on, to go celebrate with. And then every now and then I get to have a little bit of magic from Jake and Gina. Like I get to experience that, reinvigorates, and then bam, back into the community. And so there are key things people will look for to say, I want to be attached to this. That mission-driven 600 meal type stuff, that gives you an edge over the company that doesn't. Like, and you're looking for advocates to tell that story because it's more genuine, it's more heartfelt, and it's real. And so advocacy is all about how do we mobilize that? And that's through testimonials, but it's through online blogs, it's through presenting at conferences, it's through a myriad of different ways of doing it. And so it's really just identifying who are those people and what's the right channel to funnel that amazing enthusiasm and advocacy.
And the last pillar before we dive into the personal growth questions is strategic advisors.
Look, this is what you guys do, right? You've done it before. You've got the scars on your back. You've worked out how to make it work at scale, and you want to share that with other people. Being that strategic advisor, not a trusted advisor. Everyone talks about being a trusted advisor, and I'm like, why do you have to say that? I feel like, does that mean everyone else is not trusted? They're trying to deceive
me. Because of Wall Street.
They are. But, yeah, but you always see trusted advisor, and I'm like, you just expect if I go to my doctor, I'm just going to trust him. He's my doctor. But if I'm a strategic advisor, that means you're bringing something of value over and above just being delivering a service or a product. You're adding something special, some unique source. And you guys have done that through building your education programs, through building like the investments and understanding how to go. What is it? It's like finding the right property, financing, and then
buy right, manage right, and finance right. That's the framework.
You've got that methodology and you know what happens in each site, in each parts of those because you've done it. You know what bad looks like, you know what great looks like, and you're sharing that. So to me, strategic advisor is being someone that's helping me, but in a strategic way, which is a very meaningful way that's going to do something significant for me. And that's what that last one is. And it's often forgotten because they're like, we'll just build some courses and push it out there. But what's the added value you bring? So in this case, you're like, we'll do a masterclass. I'm going to get, I don't know, Ryan Serhant's going to come in and he's going to come with us and everyone knows him. And they're like, you're adding this strategic value that is really hard to get. And that's something that I think a lot of companies kind of miss that last piece. And it is actually a game changer when it comes to the impact you can have with people.
Gino, he just said you're not a primary care doc. You're a cardiologist. Biggest compliment you've ever gotten, and you didn't even realize it. So, thanks, all right, Jake. Guys. You got it. Let's take a quick time out here from our sponsor.
Are you looking for ways to improve your life?
Here at Jake and Gino, our mission is to empower students through financial education and the vehicle of multifamily investing.
Yes, Jake. We agree that a person with financial intelligence can change the world for the better.
We've created our proprietary 3-step framework, buy right, manage right, and finance right, that we teach to our community. This framework, along with education, our one-on-one mentorship, on-site boot camps, and the amazing community has propelled our students to massive success.
We've all been there. We've had so many students that have been able to shift their mindset, overcome limiting beliefs, and set a clear path to achieve their goals. Whether you're currently fixing and flipping, wholesaling, or buying single-family rentals, and you know that multifamily investing is the right vehicle for you, I encourage you to visit jakeandgino.com/apply to schedule your complimentary consultation with our team. And I want to let you know this isn't a high pressure sales call. It's really just a discovery call to get to know each other better and see if we're a good fit for working together. And if for any reason we're not a good fit, our team has tons of resources we will share with you to help you along your journey.
If you're ready to stop spinning your wheels, go to jakeandgino.com/apply and schedule your call now.
All right, we are back. Want to break down the operationalized a little bit more component. What's the best way for someone's maybe in a startup for them to start to scale and operationalize that customer service component? Any tips or ways to get, just get the ball rolling?
Yeah, I think, one of the things I've learned, doing this throughout my career, like over and over and over again. And I got to tell you, look, and you probably...
The last 30 years, yeah.
Yeah. Which just sounds weird when you say stuff like that, because I still see myself as this young 20-year-old something heading to America.
Dude, I don't see many grays there, man. You're looking good. All right, for the folks not on YouTube, all right?
All right, it's the filter on Zoom. No, but for me, like when I'm thinking about how to operationalize, there's really 10 tools that I see. And the very first one is what we call moments of truth. And I didn't coin this term, Jan Carlson. He was like a airline executive in the 80s over in Europe, turning around an airline. And he coined this term moments of truth, which is when a customer, a student, a client is going through their journey with you, there are these interactions they have that are called moments of truth. They are opportunities for us to either win the mind share of the person or lose it. You talk about calling a call center and being on hold for 30 minutes. That's a moment of truth. How's that going to work out for you when you're on hold for 30 minutes versus someone answers the phone? How can I help you? What do you need? So that every interaction, and it might not even be directly with you. It could be on your website, could be reading a review online, could be watching a YouTube video, or it could be talking directly to you, is a moment of truth. And so understanding what they all are, mapping it out, and then saying, what's the appropriate experience someone has to have at that point in the journey? And that's all it is, just mapping it out. And it seems really simple. It sounds simple when you say it. It's actually pretty challenging to understand what all those moments of truth are. But the reality is, once you've mapped them out and you know what to do, then you can operationalize it. You can automate some of it. You can teach people how to do it at scale and repeat that way of giving that experience. And so mapping it out is the very first tool I would use.
Awesome. Any book recommendations, anything you've read in the last year or two that it's had added value to your life that you want to share with the folks?
From a book perspective, I get a lot of books sent to me. There is a book called Raving Fans. I actually enjoyed that. That was kind of cool. Atomic Habits. That was actually pretty interesting, which is like change the way you operate. Like just some very simple techniques to just change the way you're like, oh, I always never have enough time. Oh, I always have too many emails unread. Like there are all these things we say to ourselves. We never take action, right? Oh,
and stop saying those things to ourselves too, right?
And then you're just you just say that's what it is, right? But it doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
So I've read some of those books as well. There's a great book. It's specific to software, but Donna Webster did something called Onboarding Matters, which is about onboarding customers into, it's kind of like think of, pillar number two for me. It's a whole book just on that one pillar. So there's some pretty cool books out there, but ultimately I tend to read more of the online LinkedIn short version stuff and try to just pick out those things that are like, oh, I need to dig more into that, or I need to investigate that more. I never thought about that. Something that challenges my thinking, I love especially, more so than the books, but they're equally great.
This is an issue with the book game right now, is that folks feel like they need to put out 800 pages. So they take that idea on LinkedIn instead of doing 250. And here's the other thing to all the authors out there. I'm looking, and I'm an Audible junkie, I'm looking at the length of the book now because I don't want to be dragged on for 8 hours or 12 hours or whatever. Let's get to the point and let's get it down in 3 or 4 hours. And I'm actually going to consume your content more if you can deliver it in a quicker, more succinct method. And it's just, whatever reason, we're going to charge an extra $3 if we can put 800 pages in it. Cut the bullshit, guys. Let's go. So my 2 cents on that.
Yeah, no, I think I'm seeing that pattern too. I'm just reading, I'm reviewing a book for a chief customer officer who's launching a CCO book into the market. Yeah. And it's actually like 100 and something pages. It's a really easy
read. I'll read it.
But it's great. I get a lot of info from it. And ultimately, what I'm now going to do is follow that person, because I'm like, this stuff's pretty cool. I'm going to follow them. And then they're going to drip feed for the next 2 years. I'm just going to get these great handy hints and tips for the next 2 years. I just know it. And I'm like excited.
Yeah. And we went through it in our last book. They're like, well, if you could extend it here, you're going to get this. This is going to be the price point of things. I'm like, but this is the book. This is what the book is. There's nothing. This is the book, guys. Come on. It's frustrating. So, Gino, are you prepared to take us home on this one?
Would you give me a minute and let me rip for a minute, Jake?
Of course. My pleasure.
So you have a young Wayne McCulloch, Jake, coming from Australia.
McCulloch.
Over 30 years ago. He said he headed over from 30 years ago. So he's been doing this for a long, long time. What are the words he said? A lot. I forgot what he said, but he's been doing it for a long time. And
a Loch Ness monster.
I want him to talk about the book also when I'm done with this, because I think the book is truly amazing. The seven pillars, if you just start breaking that down and start thinking about how you can provide value to your, you know, whether it's your customers, your education students, your residents, whatever that is, I think if you can start separating yourself and thinking about that first pillar, Jake, that operationalizing, start your business by operationalizing it and seeing how you can set up systems on the front end, because you ultimately want to scale your business. That's what you want to do. And if you don't get that customer service on the front end, you're going to get a pissed off Gino screaming about Venmo. I'm going to mention Venmo again. You suck. That's what ends up happening. You don't want that to happen. But I mean, it's been a pleasure having you on, Wayne. And I love talking about customer service, about the ways to actually, you know, help people out there think about how important of a component is to a business. And it's not just about monetizing your business. It's really about trying to add value and trying to, and this is one of the biggest components, I think, about creating a brand. You're creating a brand. We're all brands out there. What do you want your brand to represent? You want your brand to represent timeliness, to be able to be courteous to the customer, to be able to be quick, responsive. And if you can't fix it, how do you fix it? And if, like Wayne said, how do you empower your employees? That's one of the keys, is empowering your employees and empowering your team. So once again, thanks for being on the podcast. I love the book. And if you could share the book with everyone, that'd be great.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Just to find out where we can get the book and best way to get hold of you.
Yeah, sure. Well, firstly, I just want to say, look, the one thing that's most important is you want people to have an amazing experience with your brand. You talk about the strength of a brand. It's the experience they remember. Chick-fil-A, it's the experience you remember. Like, really focus on the experience, but the only way to create that experience is through driving the right culture. And we mentioned that word a couple of times, that culture of empowering people at the front line to make decisions when things go off track, not to follow the script, not to be a robot. You're a human talking to another human. Act like a human. It seems weird to say that, but we train ourselves not to. And so, but thank you for the opportunity today. The book's called The Seven Pillars of Customer Success. It's available from Amazon. It's sold in 13 countries. So if you have people listening internationally, it's available in 13 different countries through Amazon. Is the best way. You can also reach out to me. There's a cspillars.com website. You can sign up for a newsletter. I have a lot of podcasts like this, blog posts. You can learn further. You can download all the graphics from my book if you want to use it as a template straight off the website. It's completely free. Or just reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm happy to chat, answer questions. I have a real estate company in Atlanta who are reimagining their real estate firm. These are realtors. They're using this framework for their company. And I didn't write it for that. I wrote it from my experience in software, but people are saying just the notion of taking care of your customer and delivering value is universal.
Wayne, you better tell all the real estate companies to go out there and do it, because all of a sudden they're having to work now. It's not just go out there and sell a home.
This is when you want the framework, because it's not going to be.
You wanted it 6 months ago, so you're running into it now. I'm not scrambling.
It was operationalized. Yeah.
Awesome.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate the time.
Now, again, it's our pleasure, gang. And as always, we believe in buying deals for the long term. Think in decades. I'm Jake. He's a G Daddy. We make it happen. We'll see you next time.